But now on BBC Radio 4, it's time for Scottish Shorts, featuring a selection of new writing from Scotland. In today's story, an act of disobedience has a somewhat unexpected effect. Monica Gibb reads Tomato Sauce by Vivian Jones.
A bowl of freshly picked tomatoes. That's all it took. Just carrying them from the larder to the kitchen filled her head with sensual images. Square white buildings, bright paper kites in the deepest blue sky, tanned faces, ramshackle single-decker buses, a different colour for each destination. Blue for Rabat, green for Sleema, mustard yellow for Bershibulga. She didn't know the spellings, just the Moorish sounds. The images were also aromatic. Dust, garlic, engine oil, donkey dung, and fresh tomatoes. She was again an English child in pale cotton clothes, tumbling in a kaleidoscope of cultures. But what Pamela remembered most vividly about that time in Malta was discovering vomiting. Her discovery occurred one day when she wandered outside her legal play area, which was 50 yards up and down Prince of Wales Road, measured from her four white front doorsteps. She was 8 years old and wandered off limits often, much to her mother's loud dismay. But everything beyond 50 yards was so interesting, unlike everything inside it. Just on the 50-yard limit, Frankie Borges' garage radio blasted a tune called Cherry Pink and Apple Blossom White all day long. It was played on a trumpet and had a wonderful slide where the word pink would come if you sang the title over the tune. That day, she had just spotted Frankie's son, Freddie, at the garage door. He was, as usual, scuffing his feet while his father harangued him. Frankie's voice was louder than the trumpet once he got going. She wasn't supposed to play with Freddie, who was Maltese, but she often did out of sight. Mummy said that there were plenty of naval children to play with who spoke English. She said Freddie did too, but Mummy said, not properly. The truth was, Freddie told her Maltese words, made her repeat them carefully, and laughed hysterically when she spoke them in her clear English voice. Mummy had her suspicions that Maltese children didn't always show respect for the British naval officers who protected them. "What from?" Pamela had asked, instantly seeing her dad as a heroic guardian. "Bad things and people," Mummy had replied vaguely. Pamela's mother believed that she herself had been mocked by a group of Maltese women in Valletta when she tried to speak in Maltese to them. She was trying to adopt suitable Mediterranean habits. She was trying to be friendly. She had pored over her dictionary, but they had pretended not to understand. "Better to be careful," she told Pamela, "and stick to speaking English." It was a bit like that at school, too. R.N. Verdala, the British Naval School, which was just like school in Devon, only sunnier. Pamela had once asked why they didn't learn about Malta while they were there, instead of chanting the counties of England and saying a prayer for the Queen, whose jewelled portrait adorned every classroom wall. Pamela thought the religious portraits on the carts looked much more interesting. Some of them wore crowns of thorns, and there was blood showing. The teacher had said sternly that Pamela should be proud to be British, which she was, but she wanted to know more about Malta, too. That morning, Pamela crossed the road and walked up to the garage, which was set right into a high wall, like an oily cave full of roaring monsters. She knew it was only the car engines echoing in the high chamber, but it was still a little frightening. The noise might get too much to bear. Freddie cheered up when he saw her. Frankie, too. He said something rapid to Freddie and smiled at her. "Hey, bambello, bambino, you hungry?" he asked. She wasn't, but she said yes, anyway. "You go with Freddie. He take you to my house. You eat with my family. You ask your mama." She knew this was not allowed. like eating Freddy's freshly caught octopus cooked on a rusty half-oil drum on the beach, though nothing could induce more watering of the mouth. Or like joining in the religious processions in the street, dancing behind flower-strewn carts with saints' portraits wobbling. Going further than 50 yards up or down the road was bad enough, but up the steep steps in the wall to the Maltese flats above, she knew Mummy would say no. So she just ran back to her doorsteps, hid in the doorway for a count of 20, and returned to Frankie's engine-oily presence. "That's fine," she said, blushing furiously, but no one noticed, so she carried on. She followed Freddy up the steps, admiring his taut brown legs as she climbed. When they emerged at the top, she could look up and down Prince of Wales Road all at once. She pointed to her house far below. Just then a young woman emerged from one of the flats with a bowl of dirty soapy water balanced on one hip. She walked to the wall, put one foot on the ledge, called out a warning, and tipped the water into the street below. Pamela looked over the wall. It hadn't hit anyone, but you could see an enormous tooth-edged circle where it had hit. It seemed a very careless thing to do. "My mother walks up and down that pavement nearly every day," she said indignantly. The young woman laughed and went back to her flat. Freddy laughed too and pulled her away. "Hungry," he said. Frankie's house was a flat in a tumble of square structures painted white. All the doors and windows were open, and Freddy's little sister was chasing lizards by the door. She and the lizards were covered in fine dust. Freddy's mother appeared. "Bambine!" She hugged Pamela to her quilted bosom and didn't let go until she was choking. Then she held her at arm's length. "Beautiful dress, beautiful." Pamela was wearing a pale lemon seersucker dress, the kind that had tiny white knots at the intersections of the pattern. Mummy had just finished it the day before, and it smelt new, like material just unrolled on the counter for cutting. It had cap sleeves, a crisp white collar, very full skirt, and was a very pale shade of lemon. Freddy whispered to his mother in Maltese, and she beamed. "Hungry," she said, and disappeared inside the house. She reappeared with a large bowl and a plate in one hand and a huge loaf under her arm. She squatted on the step, placing the plate and the bowl, which was full of something deep red, carefully beside her. Then began to tear away the inside of the loaf until she had made a deep hollow. She put the discarded bread on the plate, dipped a finger into the red mixture and licked it, closing her eyes in rapture as she worked her mouth in sucking movements. Pamela's eyes began to water in spite of the strong, unfamiliar smell rising from the red mixture. Her mother's adoption of Mediterranean habits had not yet included garlic in her cooking ingredients. Freddy clapped his hands when Teresa poured a great swallow of the mixture into the hollow loaf, then stuffed the bread back on top and pressed heavily down. The loaf began to bleed, seeping tomato sauce through the crust. Wordlessly, Teresa handed it to her, miming that she should eat. She folded her arms and waited, her black eyes fixed on Pamela's face. Holding it in both hands, she bit into the side of the loaf. Instantly, her mouth was full of warm dough and a sharp, penetrating flavour that filled her nose and throat in seconds. The sweetness of the tomatoes was oddly transformed into a cloying, oily coating that lined her mouth and gullet. She swallowed instinctively, dizzy with the strange flavour. The moment it reached her stomach, she felt a strange spasm begin, as if her stomach took an indrawn breath before hurling the food back where it came. Its backward journey was dramatic. She had just removed the loaf from her mouth when it made an astonished "Oh!" and poured forth far more than had gone down, a great gout of blood-red liquid that arched onto her very full, pale lemon skirt, making an instant oval stain which dripped onto her white socks. Her mouth was suddenly acid hot. Teresa clapped her hand to her mouth and cried, "Aye!" whilst Freddy gazed at her in admiration. She began to tremble and, in case she should cry, started for home at a brisk pace, first placing the bitten loaf in Teresa's hand, neatly sidestepping the pool of red liquid at her feet. Freddy ran round in front of her. "Pambella, Pambella," he muttered. With a grubby handkerchief in his hand, he started to dab at her dress, but she pushed him away and scuttled back down the steps, ran across Prince of Wales Road without looking, up the white steps and into the house. Her mother just stared at her for a very long time. She had been tidying her sewing box and had the scraps of the stiff, pale lemon seersucker zigzagged by her pinky shears in her hand when Pamela arrived. The child didn't think she needed to explain. Her mother shut her eyes. "Not tomato sauce," was what she said before motioning the child to lift her arms so she could remove the dress. The front of her vest was orange too, and the elastic band of her knickers, and her tummy felt damp. Silent again, Mummy shook out a cupful of washing powder and immersed the lot in a basin. Pamela climbed the spiral stair to the ledge where Mummy stored her empty surf boxes and waited for the result among the sweet powder debris. But it was no good. The dress became orange-stained dusters, and, in retribution, she wore her old too-short candy-striped dresses for the rest of that summer, while she played only with other naval children. Freddy did not appear in Frankie's garage any more. She saw him once or twice playing on the top of the terrace with his cousins, or boys, some wild, exciting chasing game, but he didn't wave, and neither did she. It's cherry pink and apple blossom white. Pamela sang. The tune haunted her, touched her far beyond its musical effect. It made her eyes and mouth water. She breathed in the scent of the just-plucked tomatoes as she walked from the larder to the kitchen. She diced and cored them, tossed them in garlic oil and shredded basil leaves, and added a little lemon juice. Her two-year-old grandson waddled into the kitchen. "Yum," he said, pointing at the bowl. Pamela smiled. "Want to try some, my darling?" The toddler watched her while she washed a spoon, licking his lips. She offered him a small mouthful. He sucked onto the spoon, his eyes widening at the new flavours. Pamela stood very still and watched. His eyes never left her face as he investigated the taste. His mouth made an astonished tomato-lined, "Oh!"
Tomato Sauce was written by Vivian Jones and read by Monica Gibb.